I had been forced to talk with Army head shrinkers both times. There was nothing unusual about that. The entire crew went through something similar. So far, I had not snuck a peek at anyone's psych eval records. All I cared about was they had been officially cleared for duty. But I had to admit, Adams was different. I had not looked at her file because I did not want to know what was inside her head, and my reasons for that went beyond respecting her privacy. Reading her file, getting in her head like that, was too intimate for me. We had to keep our relationship strictly professional, and if that was the way it had to be, I did not want to be tempted into taking any steps toward intimacy when we were stuck aboard a ship for months or years. I closed a file without saving it. Hey, Joe, you didn't finish. Not today, Skippy. You say that every time you look at her file. Skippy sighed. Joe, you never asked Sergeant Adams why she was put in that jail on Paradise. She refused orders from the lizards just like me. I don't need details. I disagree, but more importantly, you have also never asked about what happened to her in jail. What the Kristang, I don't want to know, Skippy. It's in her classified personnel records. I know that file includes notes from the Marine Corps psych people who cleared Adams for duty. If she wants to tell me, I will listen. My voice choked up while I spoke, so I gulped coffee to cover my emotional state. The fact is, I wanted Adams to tell me about it. No, that's not what I meant. What I want is to be a person she can talk to about... No, that's not it either. I want her to feel comfortable talking about it with me, because we have that kind of relationship. The kind of relationship where two people can tell each other anything, and do tell each other everything. If we could... Crap, no, that's not what I want either. Okay, yes, I do want that. Problem is, I am Margaret Adams's commanding officer, and by the rules of the U.S. military, that is the end of the discussion, period. Sometimes I really, really hate my job. Are you okay, Joe? Skippy asked quietly in that rarely used tone, indicating he was being completely serious. Yeah, I'm fine. I gulped more cold coffee, which sucked. My throat is dry. Been talking too much. And his damned coffee is cold. You need to know. Drop the subject, Skippy. I used my own tone of voice to indicate I was also being completely serious. Nope, not this time, Joe. Without breaching any confidential records, I know something that you need to know. You are her commanding officer. You need to understand her psychological state. It affects her fitness for duty. You've never questioned my fitness for duty, I blurted out before thinking. I mean, you've never questioned whether my experience in that jail affected my fitness, and you've never said Chang or Desai being there affected them in a way that Margaret's experience there was different from you other three prisoners. Skippy? I know the Kristang tortured women, and I don't want to hear the details unless Adams or Desai want to talk about it. Desai was there. Why aren't you concerned about her? Let me ask one question, Joe. Have you ever wondered why a staff sergeant was still alive when the Ruha hit the jail? You know the Kristang were planning to kill the higher-ranking prisoners last. That's why you, as a colonel, and Lieutenant Colonel Chang had not been executed yet. Desai was a captain back then, but Margaret's rank is much lower, and she was still alive. I stalled for time, because, no, I had not given that any thought. While we were escaping from that jail, and then during the mind-blowing events that followed, I didn't have time to consider why Adams had survived that long. She was in a jail cell when I found her, and thank God the cell doors in that jail didn't require a key or passcode or retinal scan to unlock from the outside, because if I had to do anything but press a button to get the doors open, the four of us would have all died that day. No, I haven't ever thought about that. You should. The Kristang originally were executing women on the same schedule as men, starting with privates and working their way up the rank structure. The highest-ranking female prisoner was a major, but they killed her the day before the Ruhar arrived, before Margaret was scheduled to be hung for defying orders. Okay, I answered slowly. That is odd. What changed? Margaret Adams caused the Kristang to change their plans, and what she did then is affecting her today. As her CO, you need to hear this. Nothing you tell me will... He kept going. The number of women prisoners was only a quarter of the men. That ratio was higher than the percentage of women overall in UNEF. A higher percentage of women refused orders from the lizards? Yes, but The Kristang were also more strict with women on what behavior was considered treasonous. One Indian lieutenant was executed because she simply requested confirmation from her chain of command after she received an order directly from the Kristang. Because she did not immediately obey Kristang orders to fire on Ruhar civilians, she was considered a traitor. Based on statements she made afterward, she likely would have refused those orders regardless of whether her chain of command affirmed them, but the Kristang warrior caste can't stand a female disobeying them. You know that. Yeah, I do. The lizards hated the idea of any female having authority. It had been a problem for UNEF right from the start. Women in Kristang society had no power. They were basically property. A confidential memo I read after going back to Earth stated that UNEF command had taken fewer female officers than was normal for the force structure, a decision made to avoid friction with the Kristang. Some female officers had accepted reductions in rank so they could join the expeditionary force. For example, Desai was in line for promotion to major, but she remained a captain when she left Earth. She got promoted to major when the Dutchman went to Earth the first time, but for a while I kept calling her captain out of habit, because I'm a dumbass. Okay, what happened to Adams that is so important for me to know? One way or the other, I needed to know if it was still bothering her. Although Skippy was mostly clueless about humanity, sometimes I had to trust him about important personnel matters. Don't give me any details unless they're important. I will skip the unpleasant details. That for sure is something Margaret would not be happy other people knowing. He paused, and it almost sounded like he was taking a deep breath before plunging ahead with the story. It was one of those times he tried to imitate human mannerisms, and he was getting better at it. The day after you were brought to the jail, the Kristang had all the women prisoners in one room and were torturing a British Army private and making the other women watch. This private was scheduled to be executed the next morning, and the Kristang, were eager to have fun before they killed her. Shit. I gripped the coffee cup so hard my knuckles turned white. A Chinese Army Major Zhao protested, and the Kristang turned their attention to her. That major was originally supposed to be one of the last to be executed, but as the Kristang were abusing Zhao, Sergeant Adams told the lizards to take her instead. This Major Zhao was already injured from an air crash when she arrived at the jail, and Adams's sense of honor rebelled at seeing a wounded prisoner being abused. God damn. Margaret Adams is a very brave woman, Joe. Is that what's bothering her? She thinks she asked for it? I figured the Kristang were going to do whatever they wanted, regardless of what Adams said or did. No. The problem is Adams not only demanded the lizards leave the injured Major Zhao alone, she taunted the lizards. One of the jailers came over to shoot Adams with a sort of electric shock tool to make her stop talking, but Adams had managed to get one of her hands free, and she struck the lizard across the face, scratching him with her fingernails. Is that why she had those scars across her back? The lizards getting back at her? No, Joe. The lizards did that, and worse, to all the women. The issue Margaret is still struggling with is what happened next. Instead of taking their anger out on Adams, the lizards made her watch as they slowly tortured Major Zhao to death. It took 16 hours, Joe. The Kristang administered crude medical treatments to keep Zhao alive so they could continue abusing her. Then they told Adams she would be killed last, so she would have to watch all the other women suffer first. Holy shit. Yeah. Margaret feels guilty that she is the reason Major Zhao suffered so greatly, rather than dying from hanging or a quick bullet to the head. She isn't to blame. The lizards are. You don't need to convince me, Joe. So that is the reason Staff Sergeant Adams was not executed before the Ruhar hit the jail. The lizards wanted her to see all the other women suffer and die. Desai was scheduled to die the day you escaped, and Adams the next day. Joe, I do not wish to make it seem like Desai did not suffer, but by the time the Kristang got to her, they had almost gotten bored with torture. Desai knew she did not have to endure as much abuse as most of the women prisoners, and that is the source of her own guilt. She's having a problem with it also? Yes, but not to the extent that the experience is affecting Adams. Desai and Adams talked about what happened to them in that jail. They told each other things they did not even tell the psychologists at UNEF Command. Do not tell me any of it. But what if... No buts, Skippy, I'm dead serious about this. Adams and Desai were already violated by the lizards, and partly by our psych people prying into their heads. I am not going to violate their privacy.
I understand that, Joe, and I applaud your sense of honor. But nothing. Skippy, I have to trust Adams. I have to trust that if she thinks she is a risk to the ship or combat operations, she will remove herself from the duty roster. She's a soldier. I mean, technically, she's a Marine. Adams is a professional. Hell, she's more of a real officer than I am, even if she doesn't have a commission.
That's great, Joe. However, tell me this. Is Margaret Adams a danger to the ship, the mission, or herself?
Not at the present.
If that changes, you will tell me immediately, okay?
Understood?
Otherwise, drop the subject. And don't tell Adams we had this discussion.
Okay, understood, except for that last part.
Wouldn't it help bring you two together if she knows that you know what is bothering her?
Geez, Skippy. How can you be so clueless about people?
No. If she knew, then any discussion we had would be totally awkward and she would avoid me.
Hey, what do you mean help bring us together?
Joe, I know how you feel about Margaret.
Drop the subject, Skippy. Drop the subject, period. Got it? Do not mention it again.
Got it? Wow, I pressed a sensitive button there. You really...
Is this you not talking about the subject?
Oh, sorry. Okie dokie, Joe, I will not mention this entire subject again unless I determine Margaret is a risk to herself or others. One last question, please. What if she asks me directly if I have spoken to others about her?
Then you tell her the truth, Skippy.
Even if it makes things awkward between the two of you?
There is no thing between us, and I am not lying to her about this.
If she does ask, make sure you tell her I instructed you not to tell me any personal details, but you did it anyway.
Got it.
Damn, Joe. I still have a lot to learn about people, about soldiers in particular, and especially about women.
You and me both, Skippy. You and me both.
It struck me then that I was not technically a commissioned officer, as I only had a temporary field promotion of my theater rank of colonel. My regular army status of sergeant was a non-commissioned rank, just like Margaret Adams. Crap. As if my life wasn't complicated enough without my brain making trouble for me with unhelpful thoughts. Somehow I needed to get my brain to understand that aboard the Flying Dutchman, I am Gunnery Sergeant Adams's commanding officer. Even if, I mean, when, we get back to Earth, we both would expect that we're taking the Dutchman back out, and I'll be her CO again.
Crap. My real problem is that I was lonely. Sometimes really desperately lonely. The only one I could talk to was an asshole beer can, and he wasn't much help. Okay, he did help, but it wasn't like talking with a human. Not to hell with it anyway. Adams was getting romantic with a French paratrooper, according to what Skippy had told me, way back before we jumped into the Roach Motel. Hey, I was happy for her. For both of them. When you're lonely, it helps to know someone out there is making a genuine connection with another person. Okay, so I lied. Knowing Adams had a close friend aboard the ship made me more lonely, not less. But I was truly happy for her. Chapter 31. There were two dropships, so we had two teams participating in the assault. Because the French team had missed most of the action during our black op on Kobamak, René Giraud commanded one of the teams, with Smythe himself in command of the other. Each team had 8 people, and I was mildly unhappy to see Giraud had included Ranger Lauren Poole on his team, but I didn't interfere. My unofficial bodyguard had every right to risk her neck like everyone else, and she loved doing crazy shit as much as any of our pirate crew. Our Theranan Falcon dropships, in full stealth mode, coasted into the meteor shower, and the assault teams stepped out the rear ramps into the cold blackness of space. The teams were all wearing Krestang-powered armor suits with jetpacks and portable stealth field generators. Their momentum had them approaching the enemy at 20 kilometers per minute, so they did not need to use the jetpacks, other than to get clear of our Falcon dropships and assemble in formation. The Falcons very gently altered course to get clear of the meteors and far enough away so they were comfortably beyond range of the crappy Krestang sensors. While anxiously waiting for the assault team to reach their targets, I was in my office, and Skippy was berating me about being stupid or something like that. Truthfully, I wasn't listening. Hey, Joe, what's going on? I just smacked you upside the head with primo insults I've been saving for when you do something egregiously idiotic, and you barely reacted. You were totally phoning it in today. What is wrong with you?
Sorry, Skippy.
I flipped my laptop closed, not interested in the game I had been playing. I'm kind of bummed out today, that's all.
Well, you are an ignorant monkey, and a member of a species unlikely to survive the next decade despite our best efforts out here.
Is this how you cheer me up?
Well, cheer you up? Why would I do that? Oh, right. Duh. My bad. Is this when I should try that empathy thing?
You think?
Okay. How about this?
There, Joey. Everything will be all right, he said mechanically.
And, you know, some other meaningless bullshit people say to comfort their friends.
Hey, in fact, since the odds are you monkeys will be extinct soon, you should consider that a license to work on a bucket list. What would you like to...
Skippy, I do not think you get what empathy is.
Really? According to the dictionary, it is the capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from within their frame of reference. Like placing yourself in another's position, walk a mile in another man's shoes, that sort of thing.
So you do understand, although walking in somebody else's shoes just sounds like a good way to get blisters. Also, yuck, what if his feet stink?
Seriously, I would not touch your shoes with a...
Okay, you know what empathy is. Can you see you are not actually doing it?
What?
Dude, I am totally being empathetic, even though it seems like a pain in the ass waste of my time. I understand you are feeling, as you said, bummed out about something. See? I knew something was bothering you because I understood what you were experiencing.
Uh-huh. Yet your way of comforting me was to talk about how humanity is doomed.
Wait, I think I see the problem now. Empathy means you understand what some jerk is feeling, blah, blah, blah.
Saying jerk makes me think you don't. Empathy means I understand. It doesn't mean I care. That is completely different.
Oh, man, you've got to be kidding.
Oh, crap, you do expect me to care, he asked, astonished.
Holy shit, this empathy thing is way out of control. Ugh!
I had rarely heard him sound so thoroughly disgusted.
How about we avoid the whole subject?
Thanks, Skippy, I feel so much better now.
Cool. See, I made you feel better by understanding how you are feeling.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
At the risk of you boring me to tears by having to listen to you whine and blah, blah, blah for freaking ever about your stupid problems, what is bothering you?
Thanks, Skippy. It is super heartwarming that you asked.
Seriously, dude, is your bad mood because there was no real maple syrup left at breakfast this morning?
Major Sims did warn you that our food supplies are running thin.
It's not the maple syrup or all the other food we're running out of. I'm worried about Smythe's boarding party. If things go badly out there, we might have to risk exposure to protect paradise.
I'm not worried about it, Joe.
Because Smythe and his team are the very best at what they do, and I should trust them?
I only meant that I'm not worried about it because, hey, what the hell do I care? You, on the other hand, should be scared shitless about this op.
Oh, for crying out. Seriously, dude, there are like a million ways the boarding op could go sideways, and then you would be totally screwed.
Hey! Right there, I just proved that I understand what you are feeling, right?
I totally nailed this empathy thing. I am the king of empathy, baby. Woohoo!
Oh, this is not going well. In his visor display, René Giraud could see the location of every member of his team, and he could see Smythe's team of four people. Technically, he could not see anything beyond the inner faceplate of his suit, because the entire assault team was wrapped in stealth fields, so photons from the local star and even the faint glimmer of surrounding starlight were neatly bent around each soldier. More importantly, if any photons had managed to bounce off a soldier's armor, they would never reach Giraud's eyes, as his own stealth field curved those photons around him like he wasn't there at all. So, his vision was provided by sensors at the end of four ultra-thin wires projecting in front, back, and to each side. Those sensors passively collected data, which allowed him to periodically puff his jetpack's thrusters to avoid colliding with a space rock, and they received weak, low-power burst transmissions from the suits of other people. The data link between the team only told Giraud where his people were, their condition, and the status of their suits. It did not tell him what he really needed to know, where his target dropship was located and what it was doing. The two teams coasted through space, only using their jetpacks to dodge rocks and chunks of ice as they glided silently through the cloud of comet debris. From sunlight shining off objects in front of him, Giraud's suit could see obstacles he needed to avoid, although his suit was regularly pelted by fine particles of dust and ice that he could not avoid. The impacts were so gentle at the slow speed the team was moving relative to the cloud that there was no danger to suits or the humans inside, though everyone had the armored shield lowered over their faceplates for maximum safety. Everything was going exactly according to the plan Smythe and Giraud had developed, which worried the Frenchman, because almost nothing ever went right on a Plan A for the Merry Band of Pirates. In the rare case that a Plan A did go well, karma was sure to make them pay the price later. Skippy had assured them they could successfully complete the assault with only two people on each team, and one of them was for support and backup. Four on each team was a compromise to have enough people to complete the operation if something went wrong, and not having too many people's lives at risk if something went seriously wrong.
"There has been no reaction from either dropship to your presence," Skippy reported. "Your portable stealth fields are working optimally. You can thank me for the enhancements, by the way. Unless they move suddenly, my masking of their sensor probe should conceal your approach."
"Acknowledged," Giraud replied quietly, and he heard Smythe do the same. Skippy had not been able to infiltrate and take control of the dropships the way he had with the destroyer, but his magic was able to help significantly. With the dropships encased in surprisingly effective stealth fields, they each would be blind if not for a probe extending forward from the nose and a sensor at the end of a stiff cable trailing behind. Those tiny sensors were outside the stealth field, passively picking up data from the surrounding space. The greatest danger of discovery for the assault team was if one of them had to maneuver suddenly to avoid a chunk of rock. Even the cold gas thrusters used by the jetpacks might be detected if used close enough to the dropships. In the final approach, there was also a risk of even typically crappy Kristang sensors noticing the spatial distortion created by the individual stealth fields of the assault team. To help the assault teams, Skippy had performed what he considered a rather lame bit of magic. Using micro-wormholes, he had very gently moved into position behind each dropship. He projected stealth fields through the event horizon and wrapped them around the sensor trailing behind the dropships. With the sensors now unable to receive real photons from outside the stealth field, Skippy fed false data to the sensors, data which showed only happy views of utterly benign, empty space, other than the rocks and ice the Kristang expected. The beer can had wanted to try transmitting a virus down the sensor cable to partially take control of the dropships that way, but little Joey Bishop, the buzzkill party pooper, had vetoed that no doubt cool but risky and unnecessary stunt. So Skippy was bored, while he waited for the assault team to get close enough to use their jetpacks to slow down for the intercept. Giraud ran a status check on his suit, jetpack, weapons, and other gear. Then he did the same for the other three members of his team, though he could see they had all run status checks. Then he concentrated on examining what was known about his target, now that he was getting close enough for his suit's sensors to directly pick up the extremely low-power data link through the micro-wormhole behind the dropship. At first, all seemed normal. The target appeared to be a mostly ordinary Kristang model the pirates referred to as a Dragon B. There were some pods attached under the stubby wings, and one running along the top of the cabin. Giraud assumed they were part of the enhanced stealth gear. Everything was as expected, and he saw no reason to make even minor changes to the assault plan. Then he saw something that shocked him.
"Merde. Mr. Skippy, the image I am seeing."
He paused to eye-click through a menu to zoom in on and then enhance the data.
"On the nose of that dropship, there's a symbol. Is that... it can't be. It..."
His voice sputtered to a halt, too astonished to continue. He took a sip of sugar water to give his mind time to recover.
"Did the Kristang paint on the nose of their ship a Hello Kitty?"
"What? Oh!"
The beer can guffawed with laughter.
"You thought that was real? You monkeys are endlessly gullible. Damn, it is almost not any fun to screw with you. It is just too easy. Ah, suck it up and keep doing it, of course."
"You are showing me a false image?" Giraud demanded.
"Oh, come on, Renee," Skippy scolded playfully.
"Technically, with that dropship wrapped in a stealth field, any image I show you is false. All I can get from the sensor data through the wormholes is a rough outline, so I know the model and basic configuration. Anything else is a guess. The wormholes are close enough that I could pretty accurately map the exterior of that ship by projecting a sensor field, But as that would immediately alert the lizards they are being tracked, I should probably not do that, hmm?
No, Giraud bit off a sarcastic reply. Do not do that. Please, could you...
What? Is that better? In the data feed, Skippy had replaced the Hello Kitty nose art with a popular French comic book character, Asterix de Gaulle, complete with wings atop his helmet and a generously drooping mustache.
Better, yes. Better than that would be to not show us data you are guessing at.
What would be the fun in that? You've got to let me amuse myself while I'm waiting, since you monkeys aren't doing anything to amuse me. Hey, I have a great idea. You will be conducting a dangerous assault in 9 minutes. How about some appropriately stirring music to get you pumped up?
That would be an awful idea. Do not...
Too late! Prepare to be dazzled by Ride of the Valkyries by Wagner.
Ha! Giraud thought he had been saved from the jaws of death. That is an instrumental piece, Skippy. You can't sing it.
Oh, you are so wrong, mon enfant. Most people think there are no lyrics because they are used to hearing the orchestral version. You don't speak German, so I will take pity on you and sing the English language version.
No.
The music began with instruments, and at first the French paratrooper thought he had gotten lucky. Then the beer can began to sing, if such an out-of-tune warble could be called singing.
O War Father on high, I'm calling you from the battlefield, and as I take my last breath, I call for the mightiest of miracles.
Now I know why you never hear the lyrics, Jerome muttered, but Skippy ignored him and plunging on singing lustily.
For Nabata, brave, be he king or a slave, with pounding heart in his chest, will be worthy to rise and with the Valkyries fly.
Jerome considered that after he departed from that world, the humans on Paradise had suffered from attack by Krestang warships. They had survived for years on whatever plants they could grow, enduring a bland and mostly vegetarian diet. They had been forcibly relocated, first to the steaming jungles of equatorial Lemuria, then to the temperate southern region of that continent. Perhaps the worst deprivation humans on Paradise suffered was being cut off from Earth, never hearing from their loved ones back home. They lived every day in fear that the Ruhar would turn against the aliens who had come to the planet as an occupation force. And from communications Skippy had intercepted, the vast majority of humans stranded far from home feared the population of their homeworld may have been enslaved or exterminated by the Krestang. Despite all the suffering and deprivation endured by humans on Paradise, none of them ever had to listen to a beer can singing. Not for the first time, René Giraud asked himself if he had made a terrible mistake by volunteering, way back when a publicity stunt colonel named Joe Bishop had dropped out of the sky in a stolen Ruhar dropship and announced he had a lunatic plan to hit the Krestang.
What the hell was I thinking?
Giraud asked himself as he listened to Skippy warble his way through the opera.
I am dying and glad to bleed because I know today I take my place with the heroes in Valhalla of oh, damn it. I have to stop. You need to prepare for the boarding operation.
Thank God. Skippy, I would rather not die and be glad to bleed today, if you don't mind.
Would you prefer to skip the fighting songs and listen to me sing selections from Madame Butterfly?
In that case, I would very much prefer the bleeding and dying option, please.
Hm. Skippy sniffed. You pirates have no culture. No matter now, because you need to lead your team on yet another ill-advised, crazy stunt.
Ill-advised?
This was your idea, Giraud fumed inside his armored suit. Yes, but you monkeys were dumb enough to listen to a beer can. You don't see me out there flying around, do you? No, I'm staying safe and warm aboard the Dutchman while you hotshot types eagerly zoom into the unknown. Well, you crazy kids, have fun. Let me know what happens. The period of increased danger was when both assault teams, coordinating their actions exactly, programmed their jetpacks to slow their approach. The jetpacks had main engines that could not be used because their hot exhaust would be too visible so close to the targets, so they relied on a lengthy, intermittent pulsing of the cold gas thrusters. Even doing that was risky, because to slow the users, the jetpacks vented the gas forward to go flying past the targets. Soon, the sensor probes extending forward beyond the noses of the dropships detected an unusual amount of gas floating past. Yes, the sensors noted, the gas was the normal ratio of hydrogen and other elements always present in the solar wind, and it was no more warm nor cold than the surrounding cloud. But the gas density was unusual. If the board pilots had been paying attention to their instruments, they might have been curious about the anomaly. But all four pilots were half asleep, since they had absolutely nothing to do until it was time to put the disgusting humans into aero shells. Without the pilot's request, the sensor system would still have sent out an alert on their own, except for the trick played by the assault team. In addition to a jetpack, weapons, grappling gear, portable stealth field generator, and extra power packs, each suit had a package attached to the chest, and that device activated when the thrusters began gently pulsing. The packages were filled with fine dust and ice that exactly matched the composition of a broken comet that had created the meteor shower cloud. Each package expelled a puff of this dust and ice to match the thrusters, sending the contents forward to flow around the dropships. Mere minutes before the Krestang sensor systems would have sent an alarm to the pilots, they finished analyzing the contents of the particles drifting past from the rear and concluded there must have been a disturbance of some sort in the debris cloud. Perhaps the entry of the dropships into the cloud had caused objects to collide, or a passing asteroid had smacked its way through the cloud. Whatever the explanation, it was nothing particularly unusual or worth alerting the pilots about. So the sensor systems continued quietly monitoring the area as they had been instructed to do, and the pilots never knew there had been an anomaly. Maximum danger was when one by one the assault team slowly entered the stealth fields of the dropships. Jetpacks had slowed them to match the exact speed of the dropships, so the teams were motionless relative to their still unseen targets, and each pirate was also wrapped in a stealth field. Using thrusters so close to the enemy was too dangerous, so a paratrooper holding on to Giraud gave his leader a gentle push with his arms, sending Giraud slowly inward and the paratrooper away from the dropship. As he slipped inside the stealth field, Giraud's own stealth generator matched frequency to avoid disturbing the larger field. That frequency changed as he got closer to the dropship's hull, and he had to rely on Skippy controlling the generator through the micro-wormhole and an ultra-thin cable extending from his suit to the world outside the enveloping field. Encased in his own stealth and the field created by the dropship, he was utterly blind. Except the synthetic vision provided by his visor had a low-quality image provided by Skippy, as that beer can mapped tiny fluctuations in the stealth field lines. Giraud could not see the hull. He had no idea what color it was or any fine details, but he did not need it. He could see where to attach the grapple, and he did that at almost the same second Smythe's team was doing the same to the other dropship. The two Krestang pilots and the dropship targeted by Giraud's team were startled by a faint ping sound on the roof of the cabin, followed by a metallic scraping. Strapped into their seats, they looked upward fearfully, then at each other. There was another ping sound, this one gentler. That should not be happening. They were drifting in a cloud of dust, pebbles, chunks of ice, and small rocks, but the entire cluster was flying in formation. Nothing should be colliding until they were much closer to the disruption of the planet's gravity well. The dropship itself had substantial mass compared to most objects in the cluster, and if the dropship remained there long enough, its gravity would pull objects close to it. But that would take a long time, much longer than the Krestang had been in the swarm of ice and rock. The fact there was more than one ping sound was not unusual. If the dropship had flown through a disturbance in the meteor cloud, then it should have been struck by multiple objects. Fingers flying over the sensor controls, the co-pilot pulled up data showing there had indeed been an anomaly detected by the sensor gear, but seeing the data actually made him relax slightly, and he pointed to the display. Whatever shower of pebbles had pinged off the dropship's hull, it had been preceded by a cloud of dust and ice too fine to have just been noticed by the pilots, but the sensors had noticed it. The pilot shrugged and widened the passive scan, looking for any nearby objects that might pose a danger to the craft he was responsible for. There wasn't anything significant in the area, so if anything else bounced off the hull, it would be too small to pose any danger. The lead pilot yawned, wriggled in his seat to get comfortable again, and resumed playing the game he had paused. Getting humans into aero shells, setting them on a proper course in the meteor cloud, then stealthily flying the dropship back to the final crushing blow to the enemy's spirit would be a long, exhausting process, and the pilot wanted to relax while he could. The game was old, but he was having more success than the last time he played it, and he was enjoying... Three things happened almost simultaneously. There was a sizzling sound and a bright light from the roof of the cockpit. The pilot's ears popped as air pressure in the cockpit dropped and the rear cockpit door seal inflated. The visor of his helmet began to swing down automatically, too slowly to protect the pilot from the concussion grenade that was injected into the cockpit through the hole created by Giraud's explosive-tipped power lance. The interior of the cockpit instantly became a shambles, displays shattered, controls knocked offline, pilot and co-pilot killed as the soft tissue of their brains were smashed by the hammer blows of air overpressure. If the cockpit had windows, they would have been blown out. Weak spots in the inner pressure hull developed cracks and air briefly leaked out into the nano-filled liquid sealant between hull layers filled in the gaps. With his boots now securely clamped to the hull above the cockpit, Giraud and another French paratrooper attached a probe to the lance they used to burn through the hull and inject the grenade. Pressing a trigger on top shot the probe down the hollow lance, and instantly they had a view of the shattered cockpit.
"Both pilots appear dead," Giraud reported.
"I see that," Skippy replied eagerly. "Scratch the word appear. I can tell they are dead. Commence phase two." Giraud gave the order, and the other pair of soldiers activated their own lance above the main cabin where they expected the keepers to be. This second lance quickly burned through outer and inner hulls, injecting first a pair of long, thin flashbang grenades to stun anyone in the cabin, then flooding the cabin with a fast-acting gas that had a temporary paralyzing effect on the human nervous system. The gas was followed by an anesthetic to render the immobile victims unable to resist when the assault team came through the airlock.
"Skippy, do you have control yet?"
Giraud asked anxiously, while the right side of his visor showed him a view of the main cabin. Nine keepers were strapped into seats, inert but breathing shallowly. One keeper had acted quickly on his own initiative when the concussion grenade detonated in the cockpit. He had unstrapped himself and now floated upside down near the roof of the cabin, his unconscious form bouncing off the ceiling. All 10 of the humans had tiny droplets of blood seeping from their ears, the effect of the flashbang grenade magnified in the confined, airtight space. Major Smythe had inquired whether they should modify the grenades to dial down the effect, but Colonel Bishop had instantly vetoed that idea when Skippy stated he was confident no one would be permanently injured by the devices. Bishop's actual words had made even Giraud blush slightly, something like, "F those effing MFers, I'd like to stuff an effing grenade in their effing pie holes, serves those effing F-heads right." That got a big laugh from the beer can, who suggested the colonel should tell people how he really felt.
"Don't be so hasty, René," Skippy snapped peevishly.
"This is delicate work. I have to wriggle that probe around to plug it into... Ah, got it. Damn, it would have been a lot easier if some monkeys had not gotten over-eager with a concussion grenade. It almost crushed the access port I had to plug into."
"You tell us overkill is underrated."
"Underrated, yes, but not always appropriate." "Ah, whatever. It's done now. Because you Spec Ops people are super competitive, you will be pleased to hear I took control of your dropship 300th of a second before Major Smythe's dropship."
"It would be unprofessional of me to boast, Skippy."
"Aha. So I shouldn't mention that fact to Smythe?"
"Well,"
Giraud grinned, knowing Skippy could see inside his helmet.
"You certainly should not withhold pertinent information from the mission commander."
"Of course not," Skippy retorted with a verbal eye roll. "I am opening the rear door and the outer door to the portside airlock. You need to detach from those bulky jetpacks and stealth generators. I am not moving this thing until your team is securely inside the cabin and those keepers are prevented from causing any trouble." Giraud was first to enter the dropship's cabin, with another French paratrooper right behind him. As soon as the two cleared the inner airlock door, it slid closed, and the lock began pumping out air to let the two other soldiers in. To prevent the four pirates from becoming infected, they needed to remain sealed up in their armored suits, but the dropship could not move until all four were secured inside the cabin. The two paratroopers held their pistol-grip shotguns in front of them. Shotguns, regular shotguns brought from Earth, though the shells had a minimum charge of gunpowder and the pellets were liquid-filled plastic. The pellets could hurt the unprotected keepers, knock them down if there had been any gravity, and certainly knock them back away from the pirates. While the pellets had stopping power, they could not penetrate the inner pressure hull of the dropship, nor create a hole that would let precious air leak out.
"Cover me,"
Giraud ordered in English, though the other soldier was also French. They had gotten used to speaking the official language of the Merry Band of Pirates, and sticking to one language lessened the possibility of miscommunication. With the other soldier hanging back near the airlock and constantly scanning the cabin for threats, Giraud holstered his shotgun and pushed off to float over to the main control computer module attached to the back of the cockpit bulkhead. Forward of that bulkhead were two dead Cristang pilots and flight controls smashed to uselessness. Flipping up an access port, Giraud carefully plugged in what looked like a thumb drive, the motion made awkward by his gloved fingers.
Plugged in. Skippy, do you... Got it? Good job, René. I have control. How are the sleeping beauties?
Giraud gave a thumbs-up sign to his companion and turned to examine the keepers, who all had their eyes closed and were slack-jawed, drooling into the air as they breathed shallowly.
I would describe them as sleeping uglies. They are not a problem. Gaston, he called the other paratrooper. I'm going to secure the prisoners.
He pulled out a thick zip tie and slipped it around the wrists of the closest keeper. The zip ties were manufactured aboard the Dutchman under Skippy's direction and had a feature allowing the beer can to release the binds when needed. Working quickly by himself and then with Gaston after the others came through the airlock, all 10 keepers were secured in seats and firmly strapped down so they could not cause any trouble. Then the pirates got into seats, with Giraud and Gaston taking uncomfortable fold-down jump seats up against the forward bulkhead.
Skippy, we are ready for boost, Giraud reported.
Okay, I hope everyone used the bathroom before you left the ship, Skippy scolded. And if any of those keepers make a fuss, I swear, I'm turning this thing around. Giraud reached out with a gloved hand and gently moved a keeper's head side to side. The man was still out cold, a bubble of snot forming at one nostril, and he was drooling, slack-jawed.
They will not be causing trouble for anyone. Are you sure of the dosage you gave them?
Yeah, I'm sure. They'll be fine. To maintain stealth, I need to fly slowly and gently, so this could be a long trip. I don't have any coloring books. You kids will have to entertain yourselves.
You are not going to sing to us?
Giraud's stupid mouth asked before his brain could engage, and the three members of his team turned to look at him in horror.
Sadly, no. I'll take a rain check on that. I'm super-duper busy right now, and you and Smythe's team are really not large enough of an audience to appreciate my incredible talent.
Now, as the bumper sticker says, get in, sit down, shut up, and hang on.
Chapter 32.
With the keepers securely sleeping and both dropships still in stealth and now flying to rendezvous with the Flying Dutchman, and the lizards aboard the Spirit having no idea their dropships had been captured, I was eager for the delicious moment of sending that destroyer straight to hell. Dropships are close enough? I asked, and Chang gave me a thumbs up from the CIC. Great. I wiggled in my seat, because I was so very much anticipating ridding the galaxy of one more ship full of hateful warrior caste lizards. Although it felt anticlimactic to have that ship suddenly jump into the star with no warning. Maybe I should contact them first, let them know exactly what was going to happen to them, and let them know they had been outsmarted by a bunch of monkeys. Nah, that would have been indulging myself in useless...
Joe, wait a minute, I have a question.
Skippy cleared his throat like he was nervous.
If your question is something like, what is the capital of North Dakota, then prepare to be disappointed, because I have no idea.
No, you moron. Ugh, like I would ask you to remember facts. My question is about the moral dilemma we are facing.
Yes, that destroyer is packed full of hateful lizard MFers who all know and are super enthused about deploying a bioweapon that could kill millions of humans and hamsters on paradise, perhaps other worlds also. Every member of that ship's crew is a fully committed murderous a-hole without an ounce of concern for other species or even other Cristang from other clans.
I looked through the glass into the CIC and shared an unspoken WTF with Major Sims.
If you're trying to convince me killing that ship would create a moral dilemma, you are not exactly doing a bang-up job of it, Skippy.
Maybe I should say it this way. Yes, the crew of that ship would wipe out every intelligent being on Paradise without a second thought, and would happily dance on the graves of the beings they killed, after composing an epic poem about the event, of course.
Ooh. Maybe if they truly did exterminate the population of Paradise, those Cristang would commission a tragic opera to commemorate their victory.
Wow, Now that would be an interesting libretto to write. I wonder...
Skippy?
Oh, sorry. Got a little off the subject there. Okay, here's the important part. Those Kristang were raised in their overall hateful society, and they were all trained and indoctrinated in the cruel ethics of their warrior caste. So, should we consider the crew of that destroyer are not completely to blame as individuals? Basically, what I'm asking is whether this is an appropriate time for me to try working on that stupid empathy thing we talked about. No, Skippy, I answered without hesitation. This would be a terrible time for you to try working on empathy with lizards. Oh, goody. Ooh, that is a relief. This empathy thing sounds like a huge pain in the ass. All right, then. I'm ready to send those lizards on a one-way trip to hell. Outstanding. Get the... Hey, Joe, wait! Skippy almost stuttered. He was so excited. I have super awesome good news. Now, what is it? I just realized that aboard that ship is an old friend of yours, and a friend to Colonel Chang also. Chang and the CIC looked at me, and I looked at him, and we both had completely blank expressions on our faces. Before we broke out of a Kristang jail, Chang and I barely knew each other. We had met only briefly for our promotion ceremony, which for me was a publicity stunt. A friend? Oh, crap, you mean there is a prisoner aboard that ship? Human or Ruhar? My mind raced. Who the hell did Chang and I both know? Someone not aboard the Dutchman. And damn it, a prisoner aboard the ship could complicate everything. Depending on who the prisoner was, I might have to pull in Major Smythe to consider a rescue operation, or... Oh, shit, this could go south real fast. I might have to negotiate with the damned lizards to release the prisoner. What could I bargain with to... No, wait, shit. No way could I ever negotiate with the lizards aboard that ship. They knew our secret. I could not risk the lives of humans on Earth and Paradise for one person, no matter who it was. In one split second, my thrilling anticipation of a successful operation was blown, replaced by... Prisoner? Skippy mercifully interrupted my downward spiral of dark thoughts. No prisoner, Joe, and not human or Ruhar. Come on, work with me here. Take a guess. Guess? I silently mouthed, I have no idea, at Chang, forgetting it was unfair asking him to guess at reading my lips in what was not his native language. For a moment, we stared at each other dumbfounded, while the crew stared at both of us, equally mystified. Not human and not Ruhar. A friend? Who the hell did Chang and I both know who was neither human nor hamster aboard a Kristang ship? Then Chang and I both snapped our fingers at the same time. That drunk asshole on the space station? Chang asked before I could speak. Ding, 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 ding! Winner, winner, chicken dinner! Skippy chuckled. Yes, excellent guess, you two. The promotion ceremony for Bishop, Colonel Bishop and I, Chang explained to the crew, was aboard a space station above Paradise. Most of the Kristang still couldn't come down to the planet because of the virus there, so we flew up to them. After the ceremony, the lizards assigned one Kristang to give us a tour of the station while our leaders discussed something with their leaders. That lizard took us to a viewport, got drunk, and told us humans are nothing but worthless slaves and he wanted to kill us all. Mr. Skippy, that Kristang is aboard the cruiser? Not only aboard, he is presently captain of the ship. Though that doesn't mean much right now, considering that he has no control over any shipboard system. Can we talk to him? I asked while exchanging a grin with Chang. Video, too? Sure, Joe. The signal lag is only a third of a second. Instantly, the main displays in the bridge and CIC showed a view from inside the enemy ship. I had been around enough Kristang that they no longer all looked the same to me, and I recognized my old friend Mr. Asshole in the center of the view. He was looking bored and pissed off at the same time. He had no idea how pissed off he was about to be, and then he jerked as the displays on his bridge all showed a view of us. Hey! I waved at the camera built into the center of the bridge display. Hey, butt wipe! Do you remember us? Man, that lizard recovered quick from what had to be a total shock. He went from utter astonishment to anger in record time, shouting at the camera and shaking his fists until spittle flew from his mouth to splatter the screen. Damn, I laughed. That is one pissed-off lizard. Skippy, why can't we hear the sound? He is screaming insults too harsh for delicate monkey ears to hear. I will translate for you. Bad word, he reported while the lizard howled and exhorted his crew to do something, anything. At that moment, The crew of that ship were realizing to their horror that they had no control over any system. Another bad word. Jeez, he's repeating himself. Come on, put some effort into it, will ya? Oh, very bad word. Now we're getting somewhere, Skippy chuckled. I had to laugh along with the merry band of pirates because at that point Mr. Asshole was so angry he was hopping up and down, a tough thing to do in zero gravity. Hey, Skippy, he can hear us, right? Yes, he can hear you. Now he is suggesting you perform various sex acts on yourself. That one is anatomically unlikely. And another. Anatomically impossible. Damn, Skippy giggled as the lizard pulled out a pistol and shot several of the consoles on his ship because they weren't responding to his crew. He is certainly one angry lizard. My heart bleeds for him. Empathy, Joe? Sarcasm, Skippy. Hey, I waved at the screen, then flashed both middle fingers. It is so good to see you after all this time, asshole. Yeah, I'm talking about you, dickhead. Skippy, does he understand what I'm saying? Well, he certainly does, Joe, and he does recognize you and Colonel Chang. The translation of dickhead into Krestang is considered a terrible insult. He is very unhappy about the situation. I figured that from the way he is foaming at the mouth. What's he saying now? Oh, generic threats against you, the crew of this ship, humanity in general, blah, blah, blah. Really, he's not being original. I'm kind of disappointed. Oops. We need to move this along. He just ordered his crew to manually detonate a missile warhead. I can slow them down, but I can't stop it. Okay, time to wrap this up. You have their jump drive prepped? Yes, the command crew attempted to shut down the jump drive when they saw the coordinates I input, but my bots isolated the drive system from the rest of the ship. Ready when you are. Chang gave me a thumbs up. I will activate... Belay that. I barked and jabbed a finger toward the CIC. Chang held up his hands to show he was not touching any of the controls. Sorry, Chang. I have a reason for this. Sergeant Adams, get up here. If I was a real professional officer, I should have said report to the bridge. But screw it. Everyone knew what I meant. Here, sir, she announced from behind my chair. Of course, she had been in the corridor outside the bridge-slash-CIC complex, as she was part of the relief crew for the weapons consoles. Gunny, get into the CIC and jump that ship straight to hell. Sir? She asked with a raised eyebrow. Any of the duty crew can do that. Adams. I lowered my voice so she had to lean in to hear me. Anyone could make that jump. A monkey could press that button. There are a whole lot of beings in this galaxy who are owed the pleasure of wiping out the warrior caste MFers aboard that cruiser. It would be nice to know pressing that button gives one of us a small measure of payback. Margaret Adams didn't say anything in reply. She didn't need to. I saw it in her eyes. The tough gunnery sergeant couldn't hide her feelings completely. She knew I understood what she needed, and she knew I was never going to say anything about it, and that created a bond between us. In that moment, the look she gave me said far more than anything either one of us could have put into words. She straightened up, spun to the left, and marched into the CIC, relieving the Indian pilot on duty at the console. Everyone, let's give our lizard friend a big send-off from the merry band of pirates. And I flipped my middle finger at the camera, followed by everyone else in view. Adios, motherfucker, Adams muttered, and pressed the appropriate button. On the display, the image cut out and was replaced by black space with the distinct wobbling remnant of a jump wormhole collapsing. Captain Giraud, I have good news and great news! Skippy's mirthful voice boomed in the paratroop leader's helmet speakers. You found a cure for the pathogen? Giraud asked with excitement. Huh? No, please give me a freaking break, will ya? I haven't even taken samples from those infected losers yet. Yeah, they are expelling the pathogen with every breath. It's even in the hair and skin cells they shed. Yuck! Giraud reflexively pulled his armor-gloved hand away from the chair he had been holding onto, looking at the glove fingers. How many microscopic bits of deadly binary bioweapon were coating his Krestang suit? He did not want to think about it. The suits were supposedly airtight, but he knew that was not entirely true. On long missions, the suits lost a tiny but measurable amount of air and moisture from leaks at the joints, a trade-off between the suits being absolutely sealed and being flexible enough to be useful in combat. Air and lubricants leaked out of the suit, not in, according to Skippy, who did not ever have to worry about his bloodstream becoming contaminated by invisible killer chemical compounds.
Relax, René.
Dr. Skippy, the mad scientist, tried using his best soothing bedside voice, which was more creepy than reassuring.
You and your team are in no danger. Get out your sample kits. I need to pull blood and tissues from these losers so I can get working ASAP.
Don't worry. When you get back to the Dutchman, you will be put through a decontamination procedure more thorough than the usual process. No organic material will remain viable on the exterior of your suits. You can trust me about that. It bothered Giraud that the beer can aboard a starship 30,000 miles away had seen him jerk his hand away.
I am not afraid, Skippy. I am concerned.
You are afraid because you are not stupid, René. If the pathogen gets loose aboard the Dutchman, and I can't design and manufacture a practical cure, you monkeys will be in big, huge, major trouble. You do not need to worry, and I will explain every step of the enhanced decon process as you go through it, no?
Thank you. That will be very helpful.
What is your good news? Giraud asked, irritated with himself for having lost focus in an unsafe situation. The good news is we jumped that final crushing blow to the enemy spirit into the local star. Well, not quite into the star, more like just above the photosphere, so those hateful MFers could experience a moment of pure pee-in-their-pants terror as a solar flare rises up to burn them to a crisp. Jumping ships into stars or planets or just above so the crew lives long enough to know they are 100% thoroughly screwed is kind of getting to be my signature move. Man, I should create a name for that, so people will understand the implied awesomeness. Maybe I'll simply call it the Skippy. What do you think? He began muttering to himself. Naming it after myself will let people know right away they can't possibly fully appreciate the awesomeness, but they... Oh, that won't work. Stupid monkeys never give me the credit I deserve. I work and slave away in the background, and all monkeys see is the easy magic tricks I do. He sighed. Greatness is never appreciated like it should. Skippy! Giraud bit his lip to keep from laughing.
That is good news. How long until the Ruhar detect the gamma ray burst of the spirit jumping?
What? Never. Well, not never. I have control of the central sensor detection grids in this system, but there are isolated ships I was not able to infiltrate because the speed of light is such a huge pain in the ass. Those ships will report their findings to the fleet authorities on Paradise. And at that point, the code I wrote to suppress the sensor grid will have to erase itself and cause a widespread glitch in the system, or the hamsters will get suspicious. As it is, I expect a team of hamster code monkeys to be tearing their fur out for weeks trying to understand how such a serious glitch could have happened. He chuckled gleefully. I am such an asshole sometimes. Anyway, you have plenty of time to get back to the Dutchman, and for the ship to jump safely away.
You have thought of everything. You are truly the Emperor of Excellence.
For reals? Skippy asked sharply. That wasn't some sort of Napoleon joke.
For real. And we French do not joke about Napoleon.
Oh, I should have known that. Thank you, René.
You are most welcome, Giraud replied with sincerity, grateful the merry band of pirates did not have to worry about a powerful and very pissed-off Cristang destroyer. If that was your good news, I cannot imagine your great news. The great news is truly great.
Now that destroyer is not occupying a big part of my attention, I have time to sing with you. Let's start with the French classic, La Vie en Rose.
Dieu qui font bercer la mienne.
Come on, René, sing it with me. Because some Ruha ship was sure to detect and report the gamma ray burst of the spirit being jumped into hell, we couldn't wait long before we jumped away also. We got the two dropships aboard and secured quickly, then we prepared to jump away, a long jump far outside the Paradise system. Right before we jumped, I switched the main bridge display to a feed from Ruha satellites above Paradise to get one last look at that planet where over 100,000 humans were stranded. At first I wanted a view of areas I was familiar with, like the village of Teskor, which had grown quite a bit since I was there. The launcher complex at the equator was under heavy cloud cover from the thunderstorms that swept in every afternoon. I could have snuck a look at the Cristang jail where four of us were held, or the warehouse where I found Skippy, or the logistics base where we met Sims and Giraud, or even one of the Mesa projector sites that had been reactivated by Perkins and her team. That would have been too much nostalgia for me, bringing up memories and emotions I didn't have time for right then. So I set the display for a long-range view of the hemisphere that included the continent of Lemuria, and just watched as the jump timer counted down. This might be the last time I ever saw that mostly pleasant world, and I stared fixated at the image, drinking in sunlight reflecting off the bright blue seas, the white, puffy cloud tops, and the shadows they cast across dark green forests.